Well, Kolanavis Chamachim, it means that a person, see, people in their lifetimes are exposed to various parts of life. But the problem is, their exposure is not one that is resultant from directing themselves as a chacham, that they want to be exposed to this and to that. But it's a result of their situation. Most people really don't do much to change their situation. That's why you see people are born in certain towns, they stay there, they live there, there's a... Very few people really really direct their life. Usually they react to life situations. And rather than directing their life, I mean, of course, everybody thinks they're directing their life, but aside from that fantasy, usually what happens is they're being directed by situations. At different degrees in how this affects different people. But what it means is like this, that the situation of Schora is one that everybody has exposure to, more or less. You see? But really a person must have exposure to all the areas of life that are involved in Yishuv Olam, in establishing a society. All the chachmas that are involved in establishing a society. So that it means not just business. It means different areas. I mean government. It would mean areas, different areas that are involved in different various areas that are involved in Yishuv Olam, establishing society. So what? Yeah. So what it means is Lo Kol Amarva B'Schora Machim means the person that just follows the situation. See? Yeah. Political science. So the person who follows the situation. The person who follows the situation will wind up that he'll be exposed to schara. That's the extent of his exposure. You see? Because he's just... What? Yeah, he just happened to be exposed to that area. So it says, Lo kol amarbe b'schara machim. A person who is just going to have exposure because of his situation and because he has a need to help his monetary situation, a person like that is not going to be a machkin. Who will be a machkin? A person who has the exposure to schora, to shor chochmos, evenly. He's a student of human life. So he's not restricted to one area. It means he directs his life to be exposed to the various areas of life. So that's what it means. Lo kol amar b'schora machkin. The person who just allows his exposure to be based upon his need, you see, that's the person that's Mabar B'Schora. He is not a Machkim. The Machkim is the one that has his exposure is determined by his desire to gain knowledge of human life. And therefore, he knows Schora, he knows all the different areas B'nei L'Chavera that are involved in Yishuv Olam. He understands Yishuv Olam. And in order to understand Yishuv Olam, he's exposed to all the various areas of Yishuv Olam. That's what Rashi learns. Okay? Definitely. This is definite. And I one time said from Moshe Rabbeinu that I haven't seen an answer to the question, but the question is, it says by Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze El Echo Vayarish Mitzri Vayetze El Echo. Right? That says Vayarish Mitzri Makri. Right. So the question is, how old was Moshe Rabbeinu at that time? How old was he? No. I think it says it's Machlekes. Some say he was 40. 40 or 80, I think it's Machlekes. He was old. He was 40. Whatever, he was 40. He wasn't, it was not talking when he was, he's not talking about when he was 18 years old. Right? He was a grown man. So what does it mean? You mean he never knew before that the Jews were enslaved? What happened before that? Vayetze El Echo? What, it was just the, meaning he was kept in the palace all the time? He never knew there's a nation being enslaved there? So what happened at 40? What? The answer is that Moshe Rabbeinu was a very unusual person. He was different. Because most people are attracted to politics because of emotional reasons. See, everybody's interested in politics. Because basically everybody thinks that they will be able to run the world best. But and they're prepared in case the opportunity arrives. But that's an emotional attraction to politics. But Moshe Rabbeinu was unusual. He wasn't drawn to politics. He was drawn to Chachma. And he spent his life really studying Chachma. Because before a person knows politics, he has to know what's just, what's not just. That's a big question, what justice is. Not too many people, not too many politicians can explain to you what justice is. if you ask them what it actually is. So Moshe Rabbeinu was unusual in that he wasn't attracted to politics, naturally. He was really attracted to Chochmah. Once he mastered all the areas of Chochmah, then he felt in a position to go out to the to politics, because now he knows what real justice is. Now he's equipped to see whether the situation that exists before him is one of true justice or not. And if it's not, how could he? What could he do to change it? But it wasn't an emotional attraction. See, it wasn't intellectual. It was based upon intellectuality. Once he knew what true justice is, once he understood what the true ideas of perfection are. And basically, once you have the idea of perfection, a person has to know how a country should be governed. It's an absurdity today that they're involved in with the question of ethics and separation of church and state. It's an absurdity. Because since you're governing human beings, and human beings by nature have ethical questions, so how could you possibly separate the two? It's a total impossibility. The only thing you could say is that the government should abstain, because on the whole, since we have no knowledge in the area, so therefore the government would best abstain from certain areas. But if that's the case, so then, for instance, the question with abortion, so they should decide, every person should do according to, we don't know what life is, we have no concept of when life begins. So it's something we can never discover. But then what you're saying in essence is that in case it really is life and it's murder, you're permitting murder. So it's impossible for a government to so then what you should say is that suicide should certainly be permissible. If you want to be totally rational, what you should say is like this: any pursuit that does not affect another individual, an individual has a right to do, which means he certainly has a right to end his own life. Because who are you to decide? Once you say he can't end his own life, you're making an ethical judgment. Ethical judgments, now there's no separation of church and state anymore. See? And if you're going to say no, that you can't have a society like that, why? Because if we allow people to do everything that they want themselves, then the whole society is going to deteriorate. Now you're saying that you're against legislate ethics? And you're legislating ethics? So there's no separation. It's an impossible situation. It's impossible. It's impossible to resolve logically. In order for a person to run a state, he must involve themselves in ethics. That's why the system of Yadis is a system in which the government and the philosophy is all tied in one. It has to be that way. You're talking about people. To govern people means to give them the best opportunity for the best life. Now, since a person has a soul, you have to answer certain questions which will affect it. If you're not going to govern a certain way, you're going to lead to effects which are harmful. If you allow a society to decay ethically and morally, the individual that's born in such a society doesn't have a chance to ever achieve anything in terms of real perfection. So you're going to have to say that that's not perfection. Then you're making an ethical decision. So it's not separated anymore. It's impossible. It's impossible. The idea is impossible. It's only the concept that the founding fathers of this country had was not a philosophical concept. It was a practical thing. It was an admission. It was basically an admission of ignorance. And they said that for practicality, this is the best way. And there's no question it is the best way. Because you see that, I mean, for us Jews, it's definitely been the best. We've never had such a situation in history. It is the best. But that's not because inherently the system is the best. So in order for a person to know how people should be governed, he has to have knowledge of man and know man's nature and govern him in a way that it improves him. Because everybody agrees that to be benefited everybody must agree that to be benefited is the best thing that can happen to a person. And if you're going to govern others, your aim must be to benefit them. So it has to involve ethical knowledge. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu basically did not go into the area of practical government first. First he went into the area of understanding what the philosophy of life is, the true philosophy of ethics, and what real Chachmah dictates. Then Vayetze Alechov, Vayar Besiv Losom, when he was older. Once he had that knowledge, then he sought to implement that knowledge. He felt his conclusion led him to the fact that he has a responsibility. That was another conclusion, that he had a responsibility in this situation. Based upon his knowledge of ethics, he drew that conclusion. He had that responsibility. Since he had that responsibility, he had to go out and observe what the situation is and to do something to change the situation. And that's really, all the stories in the Torah basically are what the nature of his decision was. It's an interesting decision when you look at it. The decision didn't seem to be involved with making tremendous changes, mass changes. But he felt that he had some type of an obligation. If you look through, you see what he did. You understand why, what his conclusion was. An interesting conclusion. Okay. That's what I want to get to. What I want to get to is like this. It's a good reminder. What I want to get to is that before a person, when Rashi talks about the fact that a person should be exposed to the different areas of human life, and in order to be able to study them and benefit from them, that's only after he has knowledge. Knowledge has to precede it, because without knowledge, what is he studying? Nothing. He's not. He get caught up. He's not in a situation where he can study it. He's not in a position to study it. That's why I brought in the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. What must precede it is the abstract knowledge. He must have the abstract knowledge via study, books, and because you can't do, if you're going to depend upon knowledge for experience, you'll never get anywhere. You have to avail yourself of all the knowledge that the past has to offer. So therefore, study is necessary. And the first thing is study. But it means, in order for the person, once he's reached a level where he has attained the knowledge, then he can gain further from the experiences. Then he has to be exposed, because he'll gain new insight. He'll add new insight to his knowledge. He adds new insight to his abstract knowledge, or he can revise it, whatever. But he has a basis to operate by. Without the knowledge, he has absolutely nothing. That's why yeshiva really is first. If the person doesn't have the knowledge, never really is in a situation where he has any knowledge or way to think properly, where the basic knowledge of the areas is a waste of time. What kind of experience? That's why people say that you have to listen to me because I'm an older person. I had a lot of experience. Yeah, but usually our experience is that such knowledge isn't too helpful. And the reason is because the experience is the best teacher, but you have to be a very good student. That's the only problem. And to be a good student, you have to have a system of knowledge. If you just experience it, doesn't mean anything. What does it mean? The person does not analyze the experience. You have a scientist has to be able to analyze an experiment. If he doesn't have a method of scientific thought with which he approaches the experiment, it's going to be worthless. So that's why the system of abstract thought comes first. Then he can study the practical. Since a person is always affected by his neighbors, it's impossible to have a society in which you could say everybody can do what they want and that this should be the most perfected society. Because once everybody does what they want, the others are affected by their activities. And since it's human nature to be affected by other people's activities, they will never be able to be perfect, to attain perfection insofar as they're influenced from early youth by the way other people live. What to be makom shein anashim mishtadel liyosef? Over here, the term anashim refers to people who are of a very high caliber, people who are malamdim teachers, people that others look up to. That's anashim. So be makom shein, yesh anashim. Apparently, there's no need to be an ish. But makom shein anashim, so you have to. You have to try to be a man. Ish over here means a person of a high caliber, high level. That's the translation of the memra. But the interpretation of the memra, of this memra, strangely as it sounds, the most simple interpretation is really the most difficult to understand. Because the most basic interpretation, this is the interpretation that the Rambam gives, is difficult to comprehend because you simply don't know what he means. Why the necessity for a member? I mean, a member, there has to be a necessity for it. You can't just have a member. If there's a member, there has to be a reason for it. Which means that if it wasn't there, I would never think of this. There's some idea, some concept there. But the Rambam says, I'll just translate to what the Rambam says. Rambam says, B'makom she'ein anashim, says, V'inyin ishtadel, and what does it mean that you should strive, ishtadl, ishtadlus means striving, make an effort. Hagel nafshecha. He says, make your. Hagel nafshecha means. Right, to custom yourself. Umeshoch osa. Liknos hamailos. And you should draw yourself to a situation where you can have the. And you can become to the milos, which means you should be able to gain perfection. Put yourself in a situation where you can gain perfection. And since you're in a situation where there aren't any wise people that can teach you, so you should teach yourself. I mean, so what is it? What is he telling me? Of course, if there's nobody around to teach me, so I should learn myself. I should learn myself. What's the chiddush in the memor? What's, why do you need a memor to tell me this? Seems pretty obvious. Okay, anybody have any ideas? The makom hishtadlusish means that the person should engage himself in a process of self self study. Now, what does that mean? Actually, what does it mean? Hishtadl means that there must be, he must exert some effort, which means that he has to be able to study himself as an outsider. He has to be able to undergo a certain process, a process by which he can remove himself from his own self, so to speak. In other words, what he has to do is to be able to remove himself from his own personality and be able to look at himself objectively, study himself as an outsider. And through doing that, he could discover which means he should use, or he should set up to best improve himself. What it means is that it's not an automatic process. That's what it means. It means if there are nashim, if there are people that are more intelligent than you, have more knowledge than you, so then you don't have to undergo this process. Because you have a situation where you have others that you can learn from. But if there are no others that you can learn from, then you have to be able to set up. It requires a separate, that's why it says ishtadl. Ishtadl means ishtadlus. Means it requires a separate effort to be able to set up a program, a situation from which you will gain the most. But if you don't make that effort, it's a new type of, you have to set up a new institution. Ishtadl yasish means there must be a process of establishing a new institution. If you don't establish that new institution, then you're not going to gain anything. Why, it doesn't really say what exactly it is, but apparently there is a separate process. There is a separate process. I would assume the reason why it doesn't say what that, how to say any more, give us any more information about it, is because it's a very subjective thing dependent upon the individual. Where exactly and how exactly he should improve himself. What it means is that it's a different kind of situation. See, the important thing in Chazal is Chazal never took anything for granted. Chazal recognized that the biggest mistake people make is that they just flow along. Assume that they're improving themselves. They assume they're good people, so naturally, as they go on, they're going to improve themselves. They want to keep the Torah, they want to do things. So they just flow along naturally. This, Chazal say, is very bad, because this does not lend itself to any improvement. Improvement demands that you have to make certain changes, internal changes. Internal changes. Ishtadli Yasish means that you must undergo an internal change. The person must really sit down and recognize that he doesn't have a teacher. Now he has to teach himself. So he has to divorce himself from his personal feelings, be able to look at himself and to understand himself, and establish the best program that he can for improving himself intellectually and in terms of Amidus. But it requires such an effort. If that effort is not there and he does not really have he doesn't undergo this process where he really sees that he's creating a new situation for himself mentally, that he's actually establishing a new area in his mind, a new dimension, if that dimension is not established, then he can't improve himself. Just to go along and say, yeah, of course, I haven't got a better Rebbe, so naturally I'm going to try to do my best. That doesn't do anything. That's nothing. That's not improving himself. You see that Chazal were very much into the idea of not just relying on the natural emotions that people have, feelings that they have towards improvement, towards self-improvement. People feel like somehow or other they're always improving themselves. It's a natural process. It's not a natural process. It's a process which requires a rational concentration, just like in any other area of life. And somehow or other, we don't feel a way about this area. This area always feels, it's moving along smoothly. It's just like a person has to establish certain situations in order to improve himself and in order to make headway in any area. In order to make headway in any area, he has to establish certain institutions.
So too, within the soul, you have to establish certain institutions. And just to take it for granted and let it go will not work. There must be a rational approach to the internal, just like there is to the external. Nobody would expect to land a rocket on the moon if they didn't have a whole system worked out in order to accomplish that mission. Same thing with the internal. The internal level, most people tend to rely on their comfortable feelings. He's right. I mean, even when you're around other people, it can't just be a natural process. That's true. But there's a difference. There's a difference between learning how to learn from somebody else. That's one type of mechanism. You see? And then there's another type of mechanism in learning how to teach yourself. That's a totally different thing. It's a totally different situation. He has to set up a situation where he will advance, make headway, and advance. That's a different thing, because when you're learning from somebody else, the future ideas that he's going to learn are already there. He doesn't have to establish those. He doesn't have to establish those. That the teacher has that. He just has to learn how to gain from the teacher. But over here, what he has to do is to set up a situation where he's going to learn from himself. That's a different kind of situation. Learning from oneself is a different kind of situation. It requires a different kind of awareness about the situation and establishing a different type of institution within the mind. That's the way the Rambam learns. There are two other pshatim. One, the two other pshatim are brought by the Rabbeinu Yonah. Yes? Yadas does maintain that even though a person is subjective, but he can pull himself out of his subjectivity. Doesn't mean to say how far he will go, that it will become totally not subjective. But the point is, the rational element in man is such that he can gain, he can make gains, make headway against the subjective part of his nature. So that, and as he increases the headway that he makes, of course the rate increases as well. Because first he can make a little bit of headway, but then he has more rationality in his favor, he can make greater headway. It spirals. It spirals. Of course, the greater a person is, the more objective he can think about himself. But that, whether a person can be totally objective depends on the individual. But very, very few people can reach total objectivity. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, something like that. But there are variations of degrees. Okay. Another pshat, he says, is Pirish Acher. Another pshat that the Rabbeinu Yonah says, B'makam she'ena nashim, im re'isa dor, Shatoro Misrashelas Al Yodo Amod Vishtabalbo. If you saw a generation that the Torah is becoming weakened in it, so then you yourself should arise and you should try to do things to bring it back. Shenemar Eis Lasos Ladashem Eferu Torah Secha. Matam Eis Lasos Lashem. Why is it a time that you have to do for God? Mishum De Eferu Torah Secha. Because they have broken, the people have broken your Torah. Alright, that's basically it. So you see from this that's not so. There are different roles that a person has to play insofar as Torah is concerned. Which means that a person has a different obligation in different situations. That's what the halacha tells you. That in certain situations, you have to know your situation. In certain situations, leave things alone. Don't get involved. Torah is not a free-for-all where everybody simply is supposed to come and try to add to the system of Torah. The system of Torah is a very delicate thing. And a person has to know before he gets involved exactly what he's doing. And if the system is moving along, could be this person has a lot to offer. But the system's moving along. It's not his time to get involved. I mean, he should learn and continue whatever he can insofar as Abbas's Torah is concerned, but it's not his time now to get involved. This is not his generation. He's in a generation where a person has to have an awareness of how the system, what direction the system is taking. In certain situations, he should be quiet, be a recluse. There's no need to do anything. Only b'makom she'ein anashim, where a person senses that the system is weakening, that he really has the obligation to do something to strengthen the system, and he has the ability to do it, then it's a shtadl yosesh. Then he has an obligation. But basically, whether he should get involved or not has to depend not upon his own emotions, but upon an objective analysis of the situation of the generation and of his own personal situation. He has to be able to realize both ways. Some people by nature are very quiet, nirbalakelim, you know, very shy, withdrawn. So that type of a person has to be able to be mishtadli yosish when he is supposed to. On the other hand, you have a lot of people that are on the contrary, that the nature is that they always want to get involved. They always want to do something, be involved in productivity. This type of person has to know just the opposite of me, that he went to withdraw. But the memra is saying both. B'makom she'ein anashim and hishtadli yasish, and b'makom she'ein anashim should be hishtadli yasish. It's really both. But it's telling you, it mentions the positive because it's speaking in terms of accomplishing something. So b'makom she'ein anashim hishtadli yasish. If you see the system is really failing, and you see that you can accomplish something, then you're mechuyev, you're obligated to leave your personal life, your quiet personal life, and to get involved and accomplish something for the door. So chiyuv, it's an obligation. What is the obligation? The obligation stems from Avas Hashem. Because Avas Hashem, so that means you love the system of God, so therefore you have an obligation to get involved. Otherwise, stay quietly. Learn yourself, continue perfecting yourself. You're not mechuyev to remove yourself from being involved directly in your own perfection. But sometimes, b'makom she'ein anashim, then you're obligated, hishtadli yosish. Then a person is obligated to remove himself from the world of his personal improvement and personal involvement, his dalarama shel halacha, and he has to go out into the world and make a change in the situation. But this has to be based upon a rigid, objective analysis of the situation. That's Eis Lasas Lad Hashem, Eferet Tarasava. Sometimes a person has to find himself in a situation like that where he has to do it. But if there is no, if it isn't such a situation, it requires a clear evaluation. If it isn't such a situation, then he should continue in his Dawah Nama Shal Allah. He is fortunate that he doesn't have to get involved, that person. He can continue to perfect himself. Doesn't have to remove himself from his direct involvement in Torah. But some people have to. That's why the memory is also in terms of Ishtadli Yosish, because the memory is referring to a perfected individual. Affected individual doesn't want to remove himself from his Dalai Lama Shalallahu. He's very content. So Ishtadli Yasish means he has to force himself to become a public figure and get involved in the scene of Torah and improving Torah on a basis for the entire generation. And so the Rambam writes about Rav Sadia going that way. Rambam writes about it in the Geras Tema. He mentions Rav Sadia going. He says he was a man who got involved in saving the whole generation. That was me. Rav Sadia Gaon was a very quiet, reclusive person. He really wasn't a person that liked to learn Torah and liked to get involved. He had a very honest person. They fired him in one of his jobs because he didn't like his psak. But he felt at a certain point in his life that he has to get involved in saving the door, in saving the generation. And the Rambam says that if it wasn't for him, the whole generation would have been lost. So the Rambam says about Sadia Gaon. That's a different shot. In Mokum Shein and Hashem Shtadli Yasesh. The Pasuk of Eis Lasal Hashem Eferet Tarasecho also means it's the heter for writing down for having the Avos in front of us. For writing down Torah Shabbat Upah. Because the halacha is that Eis Lasal Hashem means that when the whole system becomes in jeopardy, so then a particular halacha must be overridden. Why? Because the particular halacha was there, not any particular halacha, it means a particular halacha which is there to maintain the system. A particular halacha which is there to maintain the system must be overridden when you're in a situation where the whole system might be lost. So that's why Rav Yudah Nasi was mati to write down the Mishnayos. Because he saw, what's the reason they're not allowed to write down the Mishnayos? Is because if you write down Tarshu Bal Peh, we're going to detract from the system. That's why he said, on the contrary, if you lose the whole system, you're not going to have anything to detract from. So, Eis Las Lashem Fer Tesach. That's what I mean. It means that sometimes a person has to be able to make a decision where he violates the halacha. But it's based on the rationality that that's precisely what he's supposed to do. That's why we read Erev Gemaras today. If it wasn't for that halacha, he wouldn't be able to read Erev Gemaras today. Osidurim. Chamashim. I mean, there's a door of a door show. Every generation has its leaders and has its problems. So there's always a side that can always be improved. As long as you have the Hamon, there's always room for improvement. It's So the but the point is that the person has to know whether this is the time for him to get involved. That's whether it's b'makom she'en anashim. That's what he has to know, whether it's time for him to get involved or not. Okay.
Va'od nuchal afareish another pshat. B'makom she'en anashim gedolim emcha b'chachma ishtad liyosesh.
In a place where you don't have people that are greater than you in knowledge, you should become a strive to be a great person. Nicely yes.
V'al timna milahachim, you shouldn't refrain from improving yourself. Afa pishlo timtza chacham be'ircha gadol mincha.
Even though you don't find the person in your city that's greater than you.
Afa mein b'dar hukam oscha.
And let's say in your whole generation there's no one as great as you are.
Tira atzmocha ke'ilu b'dar chachmei ha-talmud. Then you should imagine as if you're in the generation of the chachmei ha-talmud.
Va'ato imohem b'makom echad, and you're with them in one place.
Gam ki tasig b'ma'alosam, even if you reach their level, tachshov, you should think, ki im ata omedem hanevim ad Moshe Rabbeinu olav hashalom.
Think as how would you feel if you were in the place of nevim until Moshe Rabbeinu?
U'mosai tasig b'ma'alosam l'chachmasam. U'bozelo tisrashia l'ola milumot.
And this way you will never become weak and fail to learn.
U'b'chol yom v'yom haskein b'midosecha.
And every day improve your midos. He says, why?
Ki sosif al chachma secha, because you'll add to your chachma v'tiyeh kemayin hanaveya,
and you'll be like a well that flows more and more, keeps flowing more and more water. Mayin hanaveya, gets stronger and stronger. Okay? What is he saying here?
In other words, the problem with Rabbeinu Yonah is mamonasha. Either way you go, it's difficult. If you say you're speaking about a person that is suffering from a slight case of egomania, which means he overestimates himself, and that's why he thinks he's the greatest person in the town or the generation or whatever. So it would seem that if that's the case, So I mean, how would it help going back and back? He said, you'd always imagine that he's greater and greater. It's the type of thing pretty soon he'll imagine he's Moshe Rabbeinu if you tell him to do that. You know, greater than Moshe Rabbeinu.
So, and if he's speaking about a person who is a rational individual and looks at himself realistically and isn't concerned with his relative position, but he's concerned with himself, the way he is, the level he's on, and how he can proceed to improve himself. So why does he have to keep going back to these previous generations to see how small he is? That's the... That's what's difficult to understand about Rabbeinu Yonah. What type of an individual is he discussing? Why should a person be comparing himself to other people? That's the problem. And if he's very rational and that type of thing, so he doesn't need to compare himself. And if he's irrational, so he doesn't know how to evaluate the previous generation anyways. And it just disturbs him that anybody's better than him. So that's why he can't tolerate the idea that he's not the greatest in his generation. So somehow or other, if you're going to get him involved mentally in that framework, we'll work out another way over there that he's the greatest. Be very quick. We'll go through this very quickly. Yeah.
So maybe.
The key is from the last part of the member. He says like this. He says, "U'b'chol yom v'yom haskein b'midosecha." Every day you should improve your midos. He says, "V'kisosif al chachmasecha." It's an interesting thing. He says, because improving your midos will add to your chachma. He says, "V'siya kemayin hanaveya." You'll be like a person, like a flowing well that keeps getting stronger and stronger. What is he saying? This is a very important Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that a person, most people in life, you'll find, they reach a certain level and they simply stay at that level. You see them 10 years later, you see them 20 years later, they're still on the same level. Even people who are chachamim, but they reach a certain level in chachamim. And that's it. That's where they stay. Why is this so? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, he presents a very interesting theory. His theory is that it is not the intellect that causes the problem. It's not the intellect. But it's the fact that the intellect cannot attach itself to any new, cannot make any new inroads, can't attach itself to any new spheres of activity. And what prevents the intellect from attaching itself to those new spheres? It's a matter of perfection of the midos. That's what prevents the person from advancing. See, a person, let's say a person on a certain level. So, fine, so he reached a level, he's a lamda, knows how to learn. You'll see him 20 years later, of course, he will have learned many more Gemaras. There's no question about that. And he will have learned many more Tosfos. No question about it.
But to say that you sense a different person, a person that has this chachma has really expanded, where he has reached new vistas of knowledge, that you won't find. That you won't find. Why? Because the midos of the person are what prevent them from maneuvering. The Rambam really has the same type of a sheet in the Marne Vohel, where he says that metaphysics can only be for those who are really perfected in terms of their midos, in terms of their characteristics. And there are a lot of the different characteristics that have to be perfected before a person can advance. People don't realize that advancing in theory is two types. Advancing in knowledge, in chachma even. I'm not talking about in midos and chachma. Advancing in chachma is dependent upon certain qualities. The Rambam, I'll tell you the truth of the matter, is the Rambam in the Mora alludes to some of those qualities as he goes along. Alludes to some of those qualities. Those qualities can only be attained through a very serious method, program of introspection, where the person really sees certain things, becomes aware of certain things about themselves, certain shortcomings that they have, and then they realize that these shortcomings prevent them from gaining certain knowledge. The Rambam says in the Mora that every bad midah is a mechitza. It's a mechitza, it's a barrier between man and God. Every bad midah. Why? In terms of knowledge. Because the emotional barrier prevents the person from being able to have his mind focus or see new areas. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Haskein b'midosecho. Kisosef al chachma secho, he says, because it will add to your chachma. Not talking about just being perfected midos. It's talking about chachma. A person is prevented from entering certain gates of chachma because the midos prevent them from going into those areas. They prevent them. And he cannot open up the... As a person climbs the ladder of chachma, new vistas open up. You should be able to see new, qualitatively different type of areas and thought open up to him. And the way those things open up is through the perfection of the midos. Through the perfection. If the person has, of course, he has to have a good mind, but the mind gets exhausted working on one plane. And then it'll just add quantitatively to that plane. But in order to add qualitatively, to be able to see a new type of chachma, a new area of chachma, the only way he can do it is by perfecting the midos. Without perfecting the midos, he'll be the same person, just quantitatively after a number of years, because he'll be superior. But he will never open up. He will never open up new vistas of chachma. That he won't have. And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah means in the first part. Also, what he means is that many times a person comes to a plateau. So they're at the plateau. Now all they're gaining is quantitative chachma, but they're not gaining qualitatively. They don't see different types of chachma. Like the Rambam says when he answers in the Mora, he talks to somebody. He says, leave those things that you're accustomed to. He says, and come into a new area. He says, and if you can leave the past and all those things, those comforts that you have that you rely on, then you'll be able to understand this. Rambam says in the Mora, you think to yourself, what is that with understanding? If he's a logical person, he has a good mind, why does he have to leave all his comforts? Because he cannot function in that new sphere of chachma unless he could rid himself of certain emotional attachments that he has. And Yadus maintains that a person's chachma increases with the perfection of the midos. His chachma increases. That's why he says, V'sosef al chachma secha. Haskein b'midos secha, V'sosef al chachma secha. Because the chachma is impeded by the fact that he's tied to certain things. He cannot see certain ideas. That's the difference between Yadus, between our philosophers and the philosophers of the world. Because the philosophers of the world maintained that the worldly philosophers maintained that all that is required to be a great philosopher is chachma. And we say no, that unless there's perfection of the midos, he cannot. His chachma is nothing. That's why in Yadus we don't respect the person. We never had. In the world there are many philosophers and great thinkers that had great geniuses, but they lived crazy lives. No perfection of midos. Corrupt lives. In Yadus we do not
listen to such a person. Such a person is excommunicated, put in cherem. I mean, it doesn't have to be an official cherem, but it means to say that we don't listen, we don't follow him. He could be the greatest mind. Doesn't matter. Doesn't mean anything. Why? Because if such a person, on the contrary, can cause more damage because of the fact that he wasn't allowed to see different areas of chachma, because he has no perfection of the midos. Has no perfection of the midos. There's no objectivity in the chachma. He might be very sharp. He might be sharp in showing a person that what they're doing is wrong, but he still does not necessarily know. Even if he can catch them in a contradiction, it might simply be that the contradiction is one which is an apparent one, not real chachma, because certain emotions can prevent the person from seeing true chachma. Such a person we can't follow. Of course, the human mind is always fallible, but God gave us the injunction, the commandment, to rely upon our chachma, provided that our midos are perfected. If man's midos are perfected, then God told us, assured us, that if man's midos are perfected, that his mind will lead him in the right direction. So he can make mistakes, but basically it will lead him in the right direction. That combination enables man to live a life which is close to the emes, or as close to the emes as a person can get. That's actually avtocha of the Torah. The basic underlying avtocha of the Torah is that man, if his midos are perfected, and then he uses his intellect and he uses his mind, he can arrive at the truth. Even though he's fallible, I mean, he's fallible in terms of intellectuality. He can make a mistake, yes, but he will not make a mistake in the total direction. That is something that God assured us. Because without that, the whole Torah is impossible. So many people say that, how do you know? Great Chacham, maybe he made a mistake. Yeah, it's true, he might have made a mistake. It's possible. But the implicit avtocha of the Torah is that if he's perfected midos, and he's reached a level where he could use his mind objectively, he will not stray from the main course. Man will not stray from the main course of emes if he's on that level. That's why Yadis follows Talmid HaChachamim. But a person is not perfected in terms of midos, there is no telling where he's at in terms of emes. It would be the furthest pole from the truth. That's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. What he says further is, in the beginning, what he's saying is that part of this process is to study people who are greater than you, to observe them, to study their lives, and to try to gain insight into perfection through studying the people from the present or the past who are greater than you are. Mm-hmm. And studying their lives and being able to gain insight into what the capacity of the human being is. See, that's part of the process. That's part of the process of perfection. He said by Reb Chaim that the Reb Chaim's Torah kept gaining every year. He would improve. I mean, he constantly improved, even towards the end of his life. It was a different kind of Torah. The end of his life was very, very abstract. But he kept gaining and gaining. That's why he says, V'tiyah kemayin hanovea. Certain people don't gain. They reach a certain plateau and that's it. Even great people sometimes will say that they reach a certain plateau and that's it. But the person, Kemayin, in order to be Kemayin Aveya, requires a very special process. Process of constantly improving the midos and opening up new vistas of knowledge that the person years, 10 years before couldn't go into this area. It was impossible. Now he sees a whole new area opens up. That's Mayin Aveya. But that's only through perfection of midos. Without perfection of midos, you can't do it. It says that with Yaakov Avinu that the idea was that it perfected him. That's true. There's no question about it. I mean, that definitely was an improvement in his midos, and an improvement in his midos made an improvement in his knowledge. There's an interesting thing. The Gemara says that a chasin is potter from Kriya Shema, the night of the chasin. Why? Because he's too concerned. He's too concerned. Oseik b'mitzvah. He's too concerned with the mitzvah of the chasin. So therefore, the bia. So therefore, he can't concentrate on Kriya Shema. So the Gemara says like this. Gemara says that there were different stages. First they said he shouldn't. The first stage was he's potter from Krishna. He doesn't learn Krishna. Then they said no, that looks like gaiva. Why? Because it looks like Ivor. Why? Who is he to think that he has such a great Krishna that he can't take off a minute to think about the Krishna? So then he should say Krishna. So then they did say Krishna. Then there was a question of Gaiva the other way, if I remember correctly. That who are you to think that even when you putta from Krishna, you're going to land Krishna? It goes a few ways. But the first idea is an interesting idea. The first idea says that that you see that they said it was Gaiva. What does it mean, Gaiva? Of course, you imagine that your Krishna is so involved in Krishna that you can't take off. The person's getting married. All right, so we know that he's concerned with the marriage and everything else. It's easy to consider Osei B'mitzvah. Fine. But the question is that he really can't take off a minute for Krishna? Why can't he? What's the answer? And then the Gemara says it looks like Gaiva if he doesn't learn Krishna. So what's the answer? The answer is because Kriya Shema is really something which is a mitzvah which grows with a person's knowledge of Yadas. See? Kriya Shema is a different, a person that says, a plain person that's young, doesn't have any knowledge in Yadas, that says Krishna. It's a different Krishna. It's a different Krishna. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is one of the most basic principles of Yadas. And there's a tremendous amount of chachma involved in that statement. And as a person advances in his knowledge, his Kriya Shema becomes a different one. It's not the same Kriya Shema. Different idea. So that's why the Gemara says that if a person wouldn't learn Kriya Shema, he'd be implying that he's at such a high level that he has to get involved in the whole of metaphysics and stop everything and get involved in metaphysics. So the Gemara says, who says that you're on such a level? What right do you have to make such an assumption? So that's why you should say Kriya Shema. But you see that when Yaakov Avinu, when he met Yosef, so he said Kriya Shema. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He said Kriya Shema. That's right. Instead of kissing Yosef, he said Kriya Shema. Which shows you that he recognized, that he reached... Rabbeinu Yonah, it's not only B'matam Shein Anashim. It's a constant process. It's a process for everybody. That's clear. But what he means is B'matam Shein Anashim is that even, that ordinarily this process can take place when you can observe a personality who is greater than yourself, and you can see where he has made headway, so you see that there is such a thing, that there's a way to get to a certain plateau. So then you work on your midos, and you know that you can get there. But makam she'en anashim, where there's no one alive that's greater than you, you should study the greats of the past, and apply the same process. That's what he means, makam she'en anashim. That's what he means.
What?
But if there isn't your door, so then naturally you learn, you apply the process to the individuals who are in existence. But even if there aren't those in existence, so you shouldn't fail to study the personalities of the past and try to deduce from a careful analysis of their personalities the level that they were on. It's not easy. You have to be able to... It's a difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing. You have to be able to understand, to see the greatness of their personalities. I mean, they didn't write a book about their personalities. So you have to be able to study the people of the past and to be able to sort of spy on them, to be able to see, like from the corner of your eye, certain areas where you'll see what level they were on. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to do. But that's what he's... That a person that's alive, it's much easier because you can see him. He's always in front of you. There's interaction, so you know him, you see him. But the personalities of the past is a difficult thing to do. It's not easy. So that's why he says, Ishtadl, Ishtadl Yosish. There you're going to really have to be very careful in studying their works to be able to deduce certain perfections that they had that led to their... And if you improve... That's why he says, if you improve your midos, you'll gain more knowledge, because as you improve your midos, you'll see certain areas will become open to you, and then you'll see those areas among those other people who wrote in the past, among the great people who wrote in the past. And you'll be able to recognize what the perfection of a Rambam is, the perfection of a Rabbeinu Tam. You'll be able to recognize it, because you'll gain knowledge, and you'll see what advancing is, and be able to see more of what their level was. It's a whole process. That's why it says ishtadlios ish. The person is alive, it's easier to study him because you see him, there's interaction.
But to do that to the works of the past is not easy. Not an easy thing. Not an easy thing. But Chazal tell us that such a thing is possible. Such a thing is possible.
You gotta be on that level.
It's an interesting thing, but it is possible. It is possible to do that. And it's possible to be able to see more and more the greatness of a great personality of the past, to be able to understand the person and see in particular what his level was. As your chachma increases, it's one process. It's a process that most people are unaware of. You would not be aware of this process naturally. It's extremely important that a person knows that there is such a thing, because then he can involve himself in striving for it. I think it's one of the most important members. So, let me explain that. It's a good thing you said that. This does not, it's not an analysis of the personalities of the past. It's not what it means. It's a different thing. It's not psychoanalysis over there. It's not referring to an analysis of the people of the past, how they did things and why they did things. It's not, or even of the people of the present, because that is something which a person has very little chance in doing, in accomplishing. First of all, the person isn't even there to interview them. And even if the person who is in the present, what Danny mentioned, Asul Haracha Rabbo, which means many times a person can ascribe to his Rebbe a certain psychological motive, but it could be that he's doing it for a rational reason, so he doesn't really know. So such a type of analysis is not worth anything. It's not referring to that. It's referring to a combination of midos and knowledge, which means that as a person improves his midos, he sees new vistas of knowledge. Then he will be able to see in those people of the past, in their knowledge, he will be able to see the level of perfection of their midos. You see? It's a different type of thing. It's not analysis. It's not referring to analysis. Different kind of thing altogether. Let me put it this way. If you take a lot of the ideas, you see, in Chazal always had the secrets of Torah, the Sodei HaTorah, secrets of Torah. And Chazal very careful about these secrets. You see, the Rambam writes in many places, "I can't write any more, lest I be a discloser of secrets." And the Mor Nevuchim, you'll see many things that he's very cryptic about. It's like the Rav one time said about the Mor Nevuchim. He says, where you need him, he writes very little. Where you don't need him, he writes a lot. It's true. Thing is, but what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is that as a person gains in terms of his chachma and his midos, certain secrets of the Torah will become open to him. Let me put it that way better. Certain secrets of the Torah will become available to him. He'll start understanding certain secrets of the Torah. Now, these secrets of the Torah, they're called secrets because the only way that a person can gain knowledge of them is through perfection of the midos. And that's why the Mora, of course, is a sefer which the one of the greats for him that discloses the secrets of the Torah to a degree. I mean, it doesn't disclose it. I shouldn't say disclose it. It's the wrong term. Because the Rambam would be angry at that expression. Rambam says he doesn't want to be a discloser of secrets. But the Rambam means like this, that he opens it up more than others. Approaches it, gives a person an approach. He took people a little bit further. Because closer. Didn't give away the secrets, but he took them a little closer. Because the Rambam felt in his generation the situation was such that he has to, that's also one of the important jobs of the Gdolei HaMasorah, the Balei HaMasorah. Because they have to be able to evaluate the generation and to see whether now's the time to, or in this situation, you have to bring them closer to some of the secrets of the Torah, because they're straying completely and they're getting going in the wrong direction. So sometimes that's what the Rambam had to do. The Rambam and his generation, people were straying. They're going in the wrong direction, because the secrets of the Torah were kept too well. So the Rambam opened it up a little bit more, gave a little more direction. Didn't give away the secrets, but it gave a direction to bring the people back to the right path. But as a person gains in knowledge of Torah and knowledge of Chachma, these secrets of the Torah become disclosed to him. And then he could take a look at those great personalities of the past who wrote on these subjects, and he'll be able to see the perfection of their midos and their Chachma. It's a combination. That's what I'm telling you. Yadis has a different idea about the Chachma. The idea of Yadis about Chachma is, the Rambam says, as Rabbeinu Yonah says, is that Chachma is not simply a brain. That's not Chachma. A brain can be a great mathematician, but he will not have
He will not be able to uncover the secrets of Yadis. Not be able to uncover the secrets of reality. Can't. See, that requires a different thing. It requires perfection of Midos. It's a combination type of thing. It's a combination type of thing. Yes. Most people do not have an idea of this. They have an idea of perfecting the Midos. They have an idea of improving the intellect. But they do not have this particular idea. And it is something which is unique, I would say, unique to Yadis. It's a different idea. You will not only be able to see what the level is, you'll be able to see a further development of the level. When the person sees it, it's not just that he sees what's in front of him, because then what's the purpose of looking at the Gadol of the past? He reached that level already. But when he sees it in the Gadol, he could see the extent of it. And he'll know how far, he'll be able to see how far perfected that Gadol is in that thing. You understand what I mean? And he'll be able to see the direction for himself that he could reach. Hopefully, that he might be able to reach. He might not be able to, but he'll be able to see what it is. Yadis maintains one thing, that in order to gain perfection, the mind's eye has to be clear, has to be set, be able to see what the perfection is. That's the first step. Without that first step, you can't go anywhere. So, it has to be sulamutz of Arzov Roshem Magia Shemaim. It has to be a situation where he's on the ground, but he can see perfection. That's why we study perfection, even though we're far away from it. But we study it because of the fact that we can ultimately make a move in that direction through knowledge. That's the important thing. So that's what it means. It means he'll be able to uncover, be able to see. All of a sudden, he'll see something. He'll say, "That's why." Now I see the level that the Rabbeinu Tam was on, or the Rambam, I mean, was on when he wrote this idea. This idea is, you can see the level of the man, and then the person can see the extent, a greater extent. Might not be able to see the total extent of that person. That person is much greater than him, but he'll be able to see an expanse where the perfection took place, and in how far it extends beyond his own perfection. It's a combination type of thing. It's a different process. It's a unique process. It's not analysis. It's a different thing altogether. It's an interesting memra. Memra says that we're up to Vav. Afu ro gugolas achas shetzof al pnei hamaya. It's referring to Hillel. It's referring to Hillel. It says he saw a skull that was floating on the water. On my law, so he said to it, Al da'ateif da'tfuch, because you drowned others, you were drowned. V'sof matifayach yitufun, and the end will be that those who drowned you, they themselves will be drowned. Okay. It's a strange memory, because what does it have to do with Pirkei Avos? It seems on the surface to be discussing some type of divine justice. And Rashi interprets it that way, that it is discussing divine justice. And Rashi says that there were places that they didn't used to say this. They omitted this halacha, because logically it doesn't belong in a book that has to do with ethical perfection. It has to do with God's divine system, God's justice, how God brings about that a person that's guilty, some tragedy befalls him. Now that's the way Rashi learns. Let's take a look at Rashi. Others learn differently, but this is the way Rashi learns. Rashi learns, it says, Osam shehi tzifuch, those who drowned you, gam kein meisim bosam misa. They will also die in the same way. Shehem hayu chayavim misa. Now Rashi says, Shehem hayu chayavim misa, ela shener gol yedei zeh. And now he's going back to the ones that he killed, that the person killed, the skull, the one who was drowned. He says that they were really chayav misa, these people, who this person had killed. Ela shener gol yedei zeh, they were killed by this person. Midnei shehoyah HaKadosh Baruch Hu osid ligvos miyadan, because God was going to claim them for their evil deed. Ukehai amrinin, and this is, as we say, mershoyim yetzei resha. From evil people, evil will proceed. Evil will proceed. Really, this is exactly what Rashi says in Chumash.
on the Pasuk Vaho Elokim Ino Liyado. Pasuk in Mishpatim. So the Pasuk says, Vasher Make Ish Vameis Mos Yumas. Somebody kills intentionally, so then he needs to be put to death. Vasher Lo Tzodo, a person that didn't intend to kill intentionally, Valokim Ino Liyado. And God made it come about, brought it into his hands. I'll make a place where he can, where this person can go for protection. That's the Ari Miklat. Somebody kills Bishmezid, it's Chayav Misa. Somebody kills Bishogeg, so then he goes to the Ari Miklat and he's protected there from the Goel Adam. Okay. Rashi says, Volokimina Liado. So Rashi was bothered with the pasuk Volokimina Liado. God set it forth for him. As if God was involved. So he says, "V'lama teitzezos melefanov." Why should God do such a thing? Who shama David? Kasha yomar mashal hakadmoni mershoyim yitzei resha. That's what David HaMelech says. He says the old mashal hakadmoni. David HaMelech quoted the mashal hakadmoni. He said, "From the wicked, evil will proceed." Well, mashal hakadmoni, what does he mean? The mashal of the early mashal. He a Torah. This is referring to Torah. Shehi mashal kadosh baruch hu shehu kadmoni shel olam. This is a mashal of God. God is kadmoni, means God. Veheichon omra Torah. Where did the Torah say this? Mershayim yetzei resha. Where did the Torah say this? Make the statement that evil proceeds from evil people. V'olakim ino liyado. Bamei kasam medava. What's the pasuk speaking about? B'shnei it says v'olakim ino liyado. God made this person kill this other individual. So apparently when the Torah says V'alokim mino liyado, the Torah is indicating that this is God's will. So he says, why should this be God's will? So I said, I'll tell you why. Because it's speaking about Shnei b'nei Adam, two people. Echad harat shogeg, echad harat mezid. One killed the shogeg and one killed the mezid, and there were no witnesses. So then what happened? So God prearranges that they should go to one, that they should meet together in one place, in one inn. All right. So then, what happens at the inn? So one of them, the one that killed accidentally, and there were no witnesses, then he got off scot free. So he goes up on a ladder, and he slips. He falls off the ladder. He falls off the ladder. Who's underneath him? The one that killed the mazid. Right. Now, so therefore, and there are Edom there, because it's a pundik, it's an inn, public place. So, the one that killed Bishogeg, that fell off the ladder, he goes to Ari Miklat, so he gets his just reward, and so does the one that he fell apart. That's right. That's what Rashi says in the Pasuk, well, the Kimi Niliyada.
Don't go on the ladder, don't walk on the ladder. No one
was walking
where I
When did David HaMelech use this? When did David HaMelech use this? David HaMelech mentioned this when he was running away from Shaul. That was when he stayed in Ein Gedi. He was hiding from Shaul in Ein Gedi. So then they told Shaul that David is in Ein Gedi. So he took 3,000 people and he went searching for him. And then there was a situation where David had the opportunity to kill him. So he went into the camp, he cut his garment. And it says an interesting thing. So he went and he cut his garment. Interesting pasuk. Then it says, after that, it bothered David very much that he did that. It says Vayach leiv David also. His heart bothered him. He felt very upset after he did it. All he did was cut his garment, but he felt upset. Because he cut the garment that belonged to Shaul. So he said to the people, to the group that was with him, he says, Cholilali me Hashem im eses adover hazeh la'adoni l'mashiach ad Hashem l'shloch yodi bo. L'mashiach ad Hashem hu. He says, Cholilali, how do you translate Cholilali? Far be it from me, alright. It's hard to translate that word. Anyways, it means that I should never have done this. If I should do this to my master, to the Mashiach HaRashem, to stretch up my hands against him, why ki Mashiach HaRashem hu?
Shaul, of course, was at that time, as you know, was a little crazed already. He had this illusion, this delusion, actually, that David was after him, and he was really fighting. He was fighting fantasies in his mind. I mean, he was running after David for no reason. And David wanted to, but apparently he wasn't completely irrational. But David tore his garment, but he felt very guilty about it. He said he shouldn't have done it. Why? Because it's Mashiach Hashem. What did he do? Nothing. Cut his garment. You'll soon see what happens. Then it says, so why did he? I mean, why did he do it, and why did he feel guilty? You'll soon see. So yes, it says, Vayeshasa David Sanashav Advan. David cut down his people with words, and he wouldn't let them go after Shaul. And then Shaul went on the road. Then it says, then David came out of the, he came out of the Mara. He came out of the place where he was hiding, and he called after Shaul. And he said to him, Adoni HaMelech. And Shaul looked after him, and Shaul bowed down. And David bowed down. Apayim Artzvei Shaul. So many bowed down. Then David said to Shaul, he says, why do you listen to people when they tell you that David is after something bad for you? He says, here you see today God gave you in my hands, and he told me to kill you. But he had pity on you. V'omar lo eshlach yadi badoni ki mashiach Hashem hu. In other words, what I mean was that the situation arose where he could have killed him, and he didn't kill him. He says, why? I wouldn't stretch out my hand against my master because it's Mashiach Hashem. He says, and v'ovi, he called him my father. It's a language of respect. Rei gam reyes kinaf milcho biyadi. And now take a look at the piece of the garment that I have in my hand. He says, because when I cut your garment and I didn't kill you, you could see for sure that I didn't have anything bad or anything evil against you. He says, and you are after me to capture me. He says, let God judge between me and between you. The yodi lo siyabach, but my hand should not be against you. Kasha yomar moshel hakadmoni, mershoyim yetze resha. He says the mashal of the Kadmoni, the early mashal, that's referring to, as Rashi said, referring to the Torah, God, source of the Torah, Mershoim Yetzer Resha, that evil will proceed from evil people, V'yodi lo siyabach, and my hand should not be against you. Then he goes on, Acharei mi yotza malach Yisrael, Acharei mi yotza, he says, who are you running after? Kelav ha-meis, Achar parash echor, after one flea, he says, who am I against the Malach Yisrael? Nothing. And he continues with the story. And as says, Shaul really was very moved by this, and he cried, and he told him he was right. Whole story in the Shmuel. But what happened with David? First of all, what was his intention to cut his garment? And then why did he feel bad? And what was the whole thing? Actually, David was wrestling with one problem. You see, he really, originally, that was his plan, to cut the kanaf in order to show, to demonstrate to Shaul that he doesn't want to kill him. So also, why did he feel so bad? Why did he feel so bad? He felt bad because David thought that even to do such an action against the Mashiach HaRashem is disrespectful. Yeah, disrespectful.
What about his own life? I mean, doesn't
that's a big question. Work? The question is, when a certain situation, person has to know what he's dealing with. Shaul as an individual was one thing, but Shaul as Mashiach HaRashem is a totally different person. It's a different type of individual. He has to be treated differently. He's Mashiach HaRashem. That's why he mentioned it two or three times, because he's Mashiach HaRashem. So what David was trying to tell Shaul was, You could think that I have personal animosity towards you. That I can't disprove. Because when a person is convinced that somebody else has personal animosity towards him, there is no way, many times, that you can convince them that they're wrong. Because their emotions are made up, and that's it. And that argument David couldn't fight. No way he could argue with Shaul and convince him against that argument. However, there was another argument that David used. What was the other argument? His argument was, whatever I feel towards you, maybe so. But you have to realize that
my principles are such that I respect the Mashiach HaRashem. And insofar as you are a person that is, in fact, the Mashiach HaRashem, so therefore, on that basis, you should be secure that I'm not going to attack you. And then that's why I took the Kanaf to demonstrate to him that that's his philosophy, that this is his commitment. That's why Shaul was moved and he cried and he said, you're really right. Because David's argument got through to him. If David would have tried to convince him on the basis of the fact that he's really making a mistake, that he's suffering from delusions, and that David is his own jealousy and it's not really David, he couldn't succeed. Because the psyche is such that once it's entrenched, certain ideas become entrenched because of certain reasons and motivations that the person has no control over, there's no way that you could change it. No way you could change it. But David used a different argument, completely different argument. The argument was Mashiach HaRashem. You see that I'm a person that respects the Mashiach HaRashem. And in that argument, David HaMelech used this mashal that Rashi quotes over here. Mershoyim Yetze Resha. The Yodi Lo Siyabach. What did he mean? What did he mean to say? He meant to say that there is a divine justice here. There is a divine justice. Well, David HaMelech, I mean, we know, didn't leave that many things to divine justice. David HaMelech usually took care of things according to the way he saw fit. I mean, he executed justice himself. Why over here did he leave it to... Why over here did he say Mershem Yetzer Resha?
Because this man was appointed by God.
Exactly. Because here he knew that since he's Mashiach HaRashem, he has no right to move into the situation. So really, what it means is that what David HaMelech meant was like this: that there are two systems that confront a person, by which a person functions. Yeah, this is not a system of simply passivity, where a person withdraws and he just lets things happen, he just prays to God. That's not the system of Yadis. It says in the Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanov. So when Jacob sent angels before him, so it says Chazal say to meet Esav. So Chazal say that Rashi says he prepared himself for three things. He prepared himself for tefillah. He was mespalel, he matana, presents, gifts to Esav, in order to calm him down, in order to appease him, and also the third thing, melchama, battle, just in case might have to go to battle. So what do you see from this? I mean, it's an interesting phenomenon. What do you see from this? Simple thing. I mean, tefillah and this, of course, naturally. No, it's not so simple. Why? Because there are people that are emotionally they lean towards tefillah. They lean towards tefillah. They feel that a person, what should a person do? We don't have any control of things over here. Just go into the Beis HaMedrash, daven, go into the shul, pray to God, and God will take care of it. God will take care of it. There are certain people that's their belief. That's the way they operate. That's the way they function. They're not entirely right. It's wrong. Because you see that he prepared himself for Doron and for Molchama as well. Why? Because that philosophy that maintains that a person should just live in recoil, just be passive and just be mispalel when there's a dangerous situation is wrong. That's incorrect. You see, Yadis is a religion which does not believe in activity and passivity and just praying to God. It doesn't deny tefillah either, though. There are some people who maintain that what we have to do is melchama, which means we have to take everything into our own hands and we have to look at the thing rationally. Let's look at the situation. We get the armies together and we'll take care of it, and that's it. Forget about tefillah. Forget about it. That's another group. Actually, you have both groups in Israel today. It's true. You have those that there are those that withdraw completely from reality. A war is about to take place. They'll go to the wall and they'll be misfollowed.
Right? That's one group. And then you have the group that says, no, this method is the old method. This never worked in the past. I mean, that's why we started Zionism, in order to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And Jews were praying for thousands of years, and in the meantime they rose in trouble. We have to go out, we have to do ourselves, and we have to fight. Get our own jets and get out there and destroy them. That's the second sheet. And the Doron, of course, is just a Doron and Mohammed are really are just two different methods of dealing with the situation. But right, Doron and Mohammed are two different. There's something about the Doron and Mohammed also that's very interesting. We'll get to that in a minute. But these two approaches are both false. They're both false. Why? Because they're both emotions. One emotion is to assume a total withdrawal and passivity towards reality, and just pray to God. As a matter of fact, I received a letter. I gave a donation to a yeshiva somewhere, so they sent me back a letter that it's very good that I gave the donation to this yeshiva. Why? Because since they had just won the war, that was not true at the time. So it was definitely because of the learning Torah in the yeshiva, and that's why I helped my donation helped support the war effort in Israel. I thought this was very nice if people could sit at home, and they can take credit for these people going out in the battlefield and putting their lives in danger. That's nice. I mean, it's a little bit easy to do that. But at any rate, not that I. Not what? Me? I just made a donation.
Isn't it true though that in the times of Tanakh, when they actually went out to battle, though, yeah, that only select few went out, and the rest of the people were admonished to sit and learn?
So, but what does Yadus hold really? What does Yadus hold? So Yadus maintains that either the other emotion, of course, is the opposite. The emotion of just everything's in our own hands. The problem is like this: the ones that are realistic are not totally realistic, and the ones that are idealistic are not really realistic. That's the problem. The problem is because the way they're looking at reality, they're looking at reality in a warped, one-dimensional way. The idealism of the people is not based on rationality. The idealism of the people is based on a certain emotional type of comfortable situation where people want to withdraw. It's very nice. Withdraw, spoil, and this stuff, do anything. There's a certain type of emotion. The other emotion, the realistic emotion, is not totally realistic. Why? Because they do not deal with the source of reality, God. See, they deny the source of all reality. In their realism, they deny the source of all reality. So they are very far from the total reality. Why Chazal say this, why Rashi mentioned this Chazal, because this Chazal shows you the way Yaakov Wiener was. He was the total realist. The total realist. Person that recognized the whole source of the universe, he recognized the Ashgacha, and he recognized that the universe works with Chochma, with Sechel. Everything works according to laws. This is God's will. His will is that we should make use of these laws in order that we should be able to prosper and to live properly. So that's why. But sometimes all our efforts, however, sometimes don't necessarily give us the results. So therefore, what he did was all three. Tfilah, Doron, and Mohammed. Doron and Mohammed is merely another breakdown. Mohammed is, of course, where he realistically tries to conquer. But Doron shows that he wasn't under the aggressive emotion. Sometimes Mohammed could be wrong also. Those are two different aspects of reality. In Mohammed, there's an aggressive emotion. The person wants to just conquer. That's bad. If the Mohammed is only for rational purpose, that's fine. But if it's just an aggressive desire, that's no good. That's why you see prepared Doron, because Doron makes the most sense, political maneuver. However, Doron fails, then he has to resort to Mohammed. Which one was successful? Actually, all of them. Because it showed that Yaakov Avinu's total outlook towards reality was complete Chachma. And because he operated, he functioned according to complete Chachma, that's why he was on a separate level of Ashgacha, and that's why his efforts were successful.
You see? The point is, though, the point, however, is that a person cannot be in Yadus. Yadus is not a situation, it's not a religion which asks a person to live according to some comfortable emotion that resides within him. Maybe those emotions might help him for a certain time to draw him to Yadus. But once a person reaches Yadus, he has to be able to revise the emotions and be able to live on a higher level. Higher level is to recognize the total picture of reality. Tefillah, yes, tefillah is extremely important. Tefillah means that a person relates, because of the certain element in man, he can relate to the Creator, to the source of the universe. Because of that, he can be under the influence of the Hashgacha, raise himself to a higher level. Melchama, because the person has to be able to live in reality and to make use of reality, the causes of reality. That's the way David HaMelech was. That's the type of person David HaMelech was. The total realist. That's why a lot of people don't feel too comfortable when they learn Tanakh. They read about David HaMelech, how he did his battles and his things. You feel it doesn't sound like such a great religious figure. It's not the proper image for a religious figure. No, he was the greatest religious figure, because he was the person that lived according to reality. And here is where you see another aspect of his greatness. He recognized, however, one thing. Living according to reality is what God's will is. We shouldn't simply be misfollowed. We have to look at reality. We have to act according to reality. However, sometimes we must realize that this is not a situation for action. When did David HaMelech realize that? When he was fighting against Shaul. Because Shaul was Mashiach HaRashem, this is an area where you step back. Then you say, Moshel HaKadmoni, Mereshoim Yetzer Resha, the Yodi Al Tehibo. I can't do anything against Shaul. This situation is not a situation for action. Yadus, rationality, Chachma dictates that I step back. I step back, and whatever the Ashgacha has in store, that's the way it is. But we know one thing, Mereshoim Yetzer Resha. Mereshoim Yetzer Resha means that there is a divine justice. When does a person actually remove himself from human justice and rely on divine justice? When he realizes that according to Yadus, he simply has no right to act in that situation. He has no right to act. It's not a time for him to act. Then he withdraws. That's what David HaMelech said. So actually, and that's Rashi's pshat on Vesof Netifayach Yitufan. What it means is that there is a divine justice. It's based upon the incident with David HaMelech. If that's the case, so then perhaps we can understand what the memory is doing here. Because Rashi says some people take out the memory. Because the memory is just saying that there is a system of divine justice. Fine, there's a system of divine justice. It's true. But what does it have to do with ethics? What does it have to do with Pirkei Avos? What does it have to do with it? Well, what's the answer? The answer is, if you learn through the Perek in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chof Daled, so you'll discover that there is some important thing that we could derive from here in terms of our practical life. What is that? That a person has to be able to assess a situation and to be able to view the situation in all frames of reality totally, which means he has to be able to know that to take into consideration the possibility of activity and what type of activity he should go about doing. He has to take into consideration the divine system as well, and then he has to know when exactly he should use which. That's the incident with David HaMelech. So those that say that it does belong here, you see, that it does belong here, because that was a big question. I mean, what is it doing here? That's the way they learn. That's what Hillel was teaching us. Hillel was teaching us that a person must be able to know when he can act and when he can when he when he when he's he supposed to simply withdraw. That's the limit. That's why there are those that don't like this memory here, because the plain meaning of the memory seems to be that he knew somehow that this is like it's far removed with a pshat from David HaMelech is far removed from the essence of the memory. See, we're showing you it's a Russia. But the plain it's a little bit removed from the plain meaning of the memory. That's the plain meaning of the memory is simply there is a divine system. There is a divine system of justice. That we accept, but what is it doing in Pirkei Avos? The only thing it could be doing in Pirkei Avos is where we explain from going back to the Perek in Shmuel Aleph. But those that didn't like it because it's too far removed from the plain meaning. So that's why they said it doesn't belong here. We're not lowering the estimation of tefillah. Tefillah is something that could change a person's whole hashgacha, because it could raise him to a higher level if he davens properly. There's no question about it. Something that should be used all the time. But it does not. But if it's used as a method of withdrawal, if that's the purpose, that's the emotional purpose of the tefillah, that's wrong. You see that Avraham Avinu taught us a strange thing. Avraham Avinu questioned God. He said, "Chilo chalilo lecha." Far be it from you, Ashofet Kol Oretz Lo Yasa Mishpat. So Avraham Avinu questioned God, how could you do this? It's unjust. What right did he have to question God? How did he know he could do that? The answer is because Avraham Avinu knew that since God gave man a mind, and this mind can partake of reality, and can understand the reality, or part of the reality that God has created, this gives man the right to assess and evaluate situations according to the way his mind sees them. And his relationship to God is one of a Talmud to a Rebbe. A Talmud to a Rebbe has to ask questions. If a Talmud can't ask questions according to the way his mind sees it, then he can't gain from the Rebbe. Our relationship to God is as Talmidim to a Rebbe. So Avraham Avinu was a direct relationship. For us, it's through the Nevi'im, through the Torah. So therefore, a person in tefillah also has to evaluate the situation. Since God gave him a mind and he's supposed to pray to God, he has to pray to God according to the way he understands the situation. And he has to ask God for what he sees or what he thinks is right. Of course, he also knows simultaneously that he may be wrong. There's always a possibility of being wrong. But you have to formulate your tefillahs according to the way you understand the situation. That's a person's obligation. The Gemara says a person that is very confident in his tefillahs is wrong. And that's a wrong emotion. But simultaneously, a person who denies the whole institution of tefillah is also wrong. That's another emotion. The correct way is to deal with the situation rationally and to understand that our tefillah, we have to evaluate the situation according to the way we see it, and therefore we have to formulate our tefillahs. But in the back of your mind, you know that it could be that you might not have all the information or the right idea in this case. Tefillah is one of those means, so he has to make use. That's Rashi's pshat. Okay. In Yahadus, if a person is looking for total security, then Yahadus is not going to be able to give it to him. No, you take a look. Because you see, Yaakov Avinu, he's still the Vayira Yaakov Mother Yetzalam, he still didn't know. So even though prepared for all three things, he didn't have total security. I mean, this is a realistic world that we're dealing with. Yahadus, a person in Yahadus has to realize that if he's looking for an emotional type of security that's going to protect him in every situation, that's not Yahadus demands a person a certain amount of bravery here. I mean, if he's dealing with reality, he has to be able to be realistic. It is the situation which is the most realistic and gives him the best possible benefits that there are in reality. But if he's looking for a situation where there's no danger, just be totally safe. I mean, that's not Yahadus. There's a certain amount of danger. If you look through, you look through the Torah, you look through the lives of the Yavos or through Tanakh, you see. I mean, there's a Dor Malch went out to battle. It's chance. I mean, nothing's a. So a person that's looking for this sense of
invincibility
or invulnerability.
That's not Yadus. That's not Yadus. There's a different, there are different ideas, but not in terms of what, if you're going to say that, that there's a total sense of invisibility, that's not what it is. Yadus is total reality. Yadus is total reality. Reality requires a certain amount of bravery. I mean, face reality is not an easy thing. He says, Al Shaharato Vigaranto Lahatzif Gugolas Hanera, because you caused this other person's death. Hargucha, they killed you. The tzifu lugugulaska. All right. The shalot nashligas. Now it was bothering us that was bothering Rabbeinu Yonah was why will the people that killed him be killed? They did the right thing. After all, he was a murderer, so they killed the murderer. So he says no. The shalot kedinasu. They didn't do it according to halacha. Why? Ukeilu shafku dam naki. It's as if they killed innocent blood. Why? V'yadavar ki ein v'yadavar, and this is why. Ki ein b'din l'homis ha-ratzeach acha bezdin b'zman ha-bayis. Amazing interpretation. It says the only ones that have a right to kill somebody is the bezdin in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Al pi ha-Torah, according to the laws of the Torah. V'chol ha-hor go chayav misa. Hol v'ein damo masur b'yado shel horeg l'horgo. He says, anyone outside of the Bezdin has no right to take life. Only the Bezdin in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. He says, that's why, even though this individual was a murderer, so they had no right to kill him.
It's like he killed an innocent man.
And it's an amazing rebellion, like he killed an innocent man, and that's why they will be killed also. They deserve it. M'nei kach b'sof m'tif n'yituvah. That's it. It's what's the concept in the Rabbeinu Yonah? It's an interesting thing. Without the sanction of the Beis Din, you have no. It's murder. It's murder.
Killed an innocent person.
Killed an innocent person. You see what he means, follows that the whole.
He means basically, of course, that a person has no right to take another human life without the Beis Din, without a Beis Din. But we have to understand it a little deeper than that.
It's like this. What he's saying is that the only way that justice can obtain, can exist, is if you have a halach, if you have, you're functioning with a halachic system. You're functioning with a halachic system. Which means to say that if an individual, even though you see somebody's a murderer, if the society will follow that system, that I see somebody's a murderer and I kill him, then I will destroy the society. You cannot act according to that. If in order for the society to exist, the only way is if the society works according to the halachic system. Without the halachic system, it's just destruction. It leads to destruction. That's why the Torah really said that man, that's why the Torah really said that you can't take another life. What does it mean? Why can't you take another life? But you see, Bezdin does take another life. You can't take another life. How could Bezdin do it? Just the thing, you can't take another life? No, the man's a killer, we have to execute him. But the answer is, it's not that Rabbeinu Yonah was a liberal, not that Rabbeinu Yonah maintains that on the contrary, I mean, you see the Torah does say you're supposed to kill somebody, and the Ramban says that, Rabbeinu Yonah is Talmud Ramban, says that a person has Rachman L'Sochet Pasuk, L'Sochet Zeneva, that you shouldn't have any Rachmanis on the killer. And Rabban say, Chazal say, you shouldn't say, look, Rashi says, you shouldn't say, look, this person's life, like they say today. The person that he killed is gone already.